Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, it's Richard Herring's Let's Together the podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest this week is Robert Popper, who you will love. It's a very good one. If you enjoy these podcasts, why not come down here to the Leicester Square Theatre and see it live? There are 3 more recordings left as I speak. You may be watching this in the future. There'll be other recordings in the future as well. But on the 15th of November, we have got Scroobius Pip and the 22nd and someone else. And the 22nd of November, we've got Aisling B and someone else. And the 29th of November, we've got Richard Bacon and someone else. And I'm going to ask him all the questions you want to know the answers to. All of them. So come down and see it. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com. I've got something caught at the back of my throat. I'm going to have to stop talking. Keep it in. So coming now, Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with Robert Popper.
Hello, box office.
Oh, hello. Is that the Leicester Square Theatre?
Yes, it is.
I wonder if you can help me. I saw advertised a comedy show with Richard Herring on the 11th of October. What sort of show is it? Does he do magic and make things appear out of buckets, or does he do mime? What sort of programme will he be performing for us?
So he's doing a live podcast.
What is a live podcast?
A podcast is something where he'll be interviewing some other comedians.
Right.
And then it will go
onto ITV live.
A podcast is something that you can listen to on like a
like a radio device.
Yes.
And who will he be interviewing live radio?
So, he's interviewing Robert Popper.
And who is he?
To be honest, I am not 100% sure. It doesn't give me any of her details.
No, I never heard of him. Is it likely to be rude humour, bawdy humour? Would it be?
Probably. I mean, Richard Herring is quite, you know, he's kind of a bit Marmite. So some people love him, some people hate him.
He works for Marmite, but the company, so he's a representative of Marmite?
So it's more that people either love him or they hate him.
Ah, so the radio broadcast is sponsored by Marmite, is that?
No, it's not. It's just an expression, don't worry.
Sponsored by Marmite is an expression, I see. And will there be strobe lighting, epilepsy?
There won't be any strobe lighting.
And Richard Herring, who is Richard Herring? What has he been on the programmes?
So he's the winner of the Bronze Award for the best comedy.
Bronze, so he came third. Well, I'll certainly try to get down. Luckily, there's no strobes, epilepsy. Will you be there?
I won't be there today, but no. If you're coming down today, somebody might be able to help you, yeah.
Right, carry me down. Okay, well, thank you so much.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's apparently quite like Marmite, according to people who are trying to sell the fucking tickets to this thing. It's Richard Herring! Hello! Unbelievable. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. As I was down at the Arctic Monkeys gig the other day, the Arctic Monkeys were on, and kids there were all calling it Rehellastapur. So, that's good. It's catching on. It's great to be here. We've got a couple of fantastic guests. It's good. That was a very amusing prank phone call there, which the people, I have a feeling the woman who works on the box office is one of the people who hates me. Do you think that's, I mean, you know, if you're trying to sell something, you don't go, well, people either love him or they hate him. They can love him or they don't like him very much. That would be, I am like Marmite, and people don't mind me. That is what, because that's how things are, isn't it? You either like them or hate them, or hate them or love them, or you don't mind them. That's it. It's like Marmite. It's like anything, where I don't know why Marmite particularly have the monopoly on that. It's like Marmite. Maybe you haven't heard of me. For me, you probably haven't heard of me. That's for most people. We've been having fun this week. What did I put? Bake Off there. I wonder what that was about. The curse of Spitting Image has struck again this week as we're recording. We've lost... It's the curse of Spitting Image with the letter H. So we lost Dennis Healy. And recently the other one was Jeffrey Howe. Douglas Hurd must be shitting himself. Hey, just because he's 85 years old, that's the only reason. It's just law of averages. It's sad to see. It's sad to see the Spitting Image puppets dying one by one, isn't it? But they should bring them back as a sort of ghost series. We're one step closer to having Square Peg in a Round Hole made into a sitcom. This is my idea for a sitcom starring Simon Pegg, if you were listening to that one, in which he plays a nerd, a square peg, he's square and he lives in a manhole. We're one step closer in that someone has designed a poster for that. And it's up on my website. I think if the TV people see that, they'll go, well, I can now visualise what it was. So I might write 6 episodes, and then it's just a matter of getting Simon Pegg to sign. It's quite important Simon Pegg is in it. Some people would say, well, get Simon Pegg on the team first, Rich, before you... I think it'll be so strong. He's not doing much at the moment, is he, Simon Pegg? So he'll be all over that. Look, I want to crack straight on with the podcast. Slightly limited for time. We'll introduce our guest, who is quite hungry, unless his sandwiches have arrived. Seriously, we'll talk about that in a second. He's known for so many things, it's hard to choose one. He's probably best known as the assistant to the director from the Glam Metal Detectives. He also was a researcher on that. And he's also best known as being not Janine in Hot Fuzz. Will you please welcome Robert Popper, ladies and gentlemen? Right, it's Robert Popper. Here he comes. Welcome. Sit down, grab that microphone, and you talk into the microphone. It's like, that's how it works. That's a nice shot of the audience there.
Sponsored by Marmite.
But it is. Well, I mentioned last week, but Marmite have got in touch with me and because they've heard I like Marmite,
yeah,
and offered me something. I can't remember what it's called. I'm like an ambassador for Marmite.
Right.
It doesn't involve being paid anything.
Right. My is that name... a bit like that advert for what was the ambassador's party for?
It could be,
is that
yeah, with Marmite.
Marmite everywhere.
I would like that party because yeah. I love Marmite enough that if it was just a man coming out with a pot, big pot of Marmite, go on, have a dip, yeah. dip your finger in that. I would like that. Some people wouldn't like that. But I get free Marmite for life, though I'm yet to see any of the Marmite, and I've mentioned it twice now.
Right. I'm sure it will come. I mean, this is... I'm sure they all listen to this in the Marmite Corporation. Marmite Corp.
Yeah.
And,
but that's not a very good deal, is it, a celebrity, just to be paid in Marmite?
It's not bad.
But
I
eat a lot of Marmite.
Do
and
you?
I'm
so you, have you worked out financially? I mean, how much is a tub of Marmite? How much do you have a year?
I eat a lot. Like, right. You know the small tubs of Marmite that normal people get? That's one piece of toast for me, more or less.
So how much is one of those?
Well, that's probably a couple of quid.
So, you're having about... Do you have one slice or two slices?
I usually have two slices.
So it's about £4 a day.
Yeah.
So that works out about, I don't know, 1,400? Maths genius. 1,400 quid a year?
Yeah, although I reckon Marmite probably
and you've got, like,
get
another...
it cheaper than we do.
Yeah, another...
To Marmite. It's the bloke at the Marmite factory is sending out my... I haven't had any of this. I only accepted because I wanted to see what free Marmite for life would be and whether it would be like, we'll send you one jar a year, which is not free Marmite for life.
Or it might come in just a big dried sort of block, yeah. but slowly, like, rots. So you have to chip away or something like that. That'd
well,
be
I'm
nice.
Interested to see, but they haven't made good on their promise yet, so I can't tell you. Anyway, let's talk about the Glam Metal Detectives, which I was obsessed with.
Yeah, I know. I remember you hated it. It was my first job. That was my first job in TV, that was, working with Peter Richardson.
I've hated a lot of the things you've been involved with, I have
that's
to say.
That's good, yeah.
So,
this will be
and
fun.
I'm mainly going to talk about those. But I've liked a lot of the things you've
talked
about.
Oh, that's
all
right.
But
that's
I have, right. A few of them are the things that I hate
no,
most
please,
in common.
Please.
I didn't really hate Glam Metal Detectives, but it was sort
I mean,
of
I was
a weird...
I was like a runner. I mean, my job's involved...
And assistant to the director.
Yeah, it involved... God, it was a really... I had a weird... It was great because it was working with Peter Richardson, who was brilliant. But I remember at one stage, I used to live in Edgware, and in the morning, I'd have to drive to South... That's Northwest London, drive to Camberwell in South London, pick him up at about 4 a.m, and then drive to Harlesden in Northwest London for the shoot and just repeat this the whole time until I sort of almost died, yeah, it was good.
Couldn't he not get a
and I remember having to, like, shovel up horse shit, literally, on the set. And everyone just laughing at me. Yeah. That was nice.
And that was funnier than anything in the Glam Metal Detectives.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's true.
My friend Paul Putner was in the Glam Metal Detectives.
I remember that, yeah. He was. Very nice man.
It was, you know, there was... Yeah, it wasn't
It was
good.
Of its time.
And who was not Janine in Hot Fuzz? What character was that?
That was a man that... Yeah, it was. I had to stand in a biological suit so you can't see my face. And then Simon Pegg said, Janine, to me. And I went, I'm not Janine. And I did it so well, that was my only line. We had to redo the line. like 3 weeks later in the studio, I had to do the line, not just there. I had to, like, revoice it. So it was successful, that was.
But you were inside a big suit, so probably they couldn't mic it up properly.
Exactly.
That was probably a mic error rather than your error. One of my first jobs was voicing this comedy spider in a school's TV programme.
Which I love, by the way.
Well,
it was wonderful.
You never heard it, because the tape went wrong, and then they got someone else in to do it.
Oh, it's a tape. The technology
the
then.
Tape went
I'm
wrong.
Sure if you did it now, it would be wonderful again.
I really thought about what the spider would be feeling, what would be how we would act. I think you talk, hello, I'm a spider. I think you talked a bit like that.
Well, you're a very emotional performer, aren't you? You really are.
So you did. You were, I mean, that must. Have, you did you work on the comic strip as well as the? Well,
yeah, well, I was kind of doing a bit of a lean period. I remember. Like, he was trying to get commissions and he was funny, Peter Richardson. He's brilliant. He's amazing. And I remember one time he had an argument with the producer, Naira Park, who went on to produce Spaced and loads of films, Simon Pegg films and stuff. And I think he got angry with me and her and he stormed out and they had a big, argument. And I remember it was summer. And then obviously he felt guilty and he came back, and this is his, like, social skills, which are brilliant. He came back and obviously he felt guilty and he bought us a present, and he bought us both, I promise you this is true, this is July, he bought us skiing gloves, a set each. I've still got them.
He's sure he
never ever skied.
Do you think he just had those in his cupboard?
Maybe so, yeah. Emergency presents.
I've got some skiing gloves. I'd know.
What, from Peter Richardson?
No, I'd have got them at home. I'd have brought them in.
Oh, you should have.
Because I don't... Well, I might go skiing again. You never know. I've been once and I won't do it again. And so, I mean, you've worked on so many different things. It's quite incredible, really. I mean, people know you from... Look Around You and from Robin Cooper, but you commissioned Bow Selector.
Yes, I did, which you either love or hate. Yeah. A bit like you, really.
I didn't like it.
No, I know you didn't.
Okay.
I didn't think you were going to go, which I absolutely adored. It was just subtle. It was so clever.
I think, you know, but I sort of have a soft spot for Lee Francis in a way. But yeah. I think my problem with Lee Francis is I saw one of his very early versions of Avid Merrion, like on ITV years and years ago, yep. And it was exactly like Simon Quinlank from Fist of Fun. I mean, it was exactly Kevin Eldon's performance, and then he slightly modified it. But basically, that's why I don't like him, because I feel
he was funny because when I used to work at Granada TV, well, I say work in inverted commas because that's when I wrote my books. But I got to know him, and he's a really funny guy. He used to just turn up at the offices at TV Centre, whatever it's called, the horrible building.
Oh, right? Yes.
London Television Centre that's just from the 70s still. And he'd turn up there in a character, like a different character with like big teeth and a woman's wig and like a dress, and regularly wouldn't get allowed in just to see me. He wouldn't tell me he was coming. And he would just leave me like a parcel of weird stuff. And the best one he ever left me was a parcel. And inside it was a Polaroid picture of him being thrown out by the security people. You get him like that. And but I got that. And that was, I was here and I was thrown out. He used to do those things, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. But obviously, you just, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
No. Next question, please.
I think I never got on a Channel 4 because every time I went in, Andrew Newman would go, "You're the guy who doesn't like Bow Selector," and then he'd tell me why Bow Selector was good, and then I would be asked to leave when I was trying to pitch ideas to him.
So you should use this to say that it was the greatest comedy program ever, better than 40 Towers, and you'll just get. Your program is made.
Yeah, I'll try that. I'm not sure he's still there. You also commissioned Black Books and Spaced, or you're involved in those?
I was involved in them, but I didn't. Yeah, I worked on those two shows. Yeah, that was good.
So that kind
I
of
stole
makes,
a book. I stole a book from the Black Books set. Actually,
did you?
When I was down there as a commission, meant to be important, and I've got it. And it's called The Best of British Bacon Recipes, and it was so good. It's a thin book from the 70s, and it's got a map of Britain, but done in bacon. It's amazing. And the first line was like, everyone loves bacon. I thought, well, I'm Jewish. I don't know about that. But I mean, I actually do love bacon, but, you know.
Yeah. But they all do. Yeah, they good. All
it's,
do,
it's
Robert.
It's actually worth looking afterwards on the line, online,
because
it's just a brilliant image.
Okay.
Jews eating bacon. That's the whole book. It's just... The best of British... And then at the end it goes, but Jewish people don't like bacon, and it has... crying Jews being force-fed bacon. I don't know.
I think they like bacon. They just like it on the pig, don't they? Like the pig to stay alive. Is that the idea? I don't really know. I've got too deep into a subject I don't know enough about.
Right. Well, you mean they just sort of lick a pig?
They like the bacon being on the pig still and the pig still being alive.
You mean
well.
They just like pigs as
well,
animals?
Do they hate pigs? And that's why they won't eat the pigs.
Oh, they just hate the animal pigs.
They hate them so much they won't eat them.
They just
them.
Hate pigs. Maybe it's that.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Is there a rabbi in the audience?
I thought you might be able to clear it up
They're
for
all
me.
Rabbis? Oh, my God. That would be weird, wouldn't it? They're just all rabbis.
And Look Around You. Well, can we do a quick whiz? There's so much to talk about. There's so many different things. But Look Around You, which you wrote with Peter Serafinovich.
Peter Serafinovich? No, Witch. Peter Serafinovich.
Witch. Yeah,
yep.
I saw you interviewed about it, and did you make some that you didn't put out, or did you just write some that you didn't put out? Because you talked about an episode about a goal.
Oh, yeah, we wrote another episode about, this was a sort of scores and televisions-y series we made two of them, like the second one was like a Tomorrow's World thing, wasn't as good. And the first one was like more science-y, educational experiment things, like, yeah. We wrote another episode called Gold. And there was one thing that I liked in it that was kind of freaky, which was something about gold being used as an alloy or something in a lot of research. in swimming pools in the diving boards for some reason, and it, and the shot was of a girl like climbing up to the top of the diving board and like bouncing and then diving into the water. And it was, and while this is going on, it's saying, you know, the god is so strong as an ally, blah 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 blah, and he talks for about a minute and she dives into the pool and you just hold the shot. And he keeps talking, and then you just realise after about a minute and a half, the girl's never come out of the water. It's just, it's the girl. And she's definitely dead. And there was another experiment where, we should have done it, where you get a raspberry. If you feed electric current through a raspberry, a gold-coated raspberry, that was it, which you had to shave. You had to shave the raspberry first. That was shaved. It's coated. And you feed an electric current, and it's put through a woman in a box. Then, like, a double is made. But it's not mentioned, but the double is kind of sort of a bit simple. And it's all in a kind of sort of weird, like, Russian-type psychiatric hospital vibe. And then you see the woman who the double was made from playing the piano really well, and the double sitting next to her watching her sort of, I wish I could do that type thought. And then at the end it said the double is then led away. I think it might have been destroyed, I can't remember, but it's clear that's what was going to happen.
But that never got filmed, though.
That's not just in our heads, that is on paper.
It's on paper, but it's not in your heads.
Yeah.
And again, you did that. So what were you doing? You were just work at Granada as a producer or as a... What were you doing?
I can't remember when I did that one.
Because you said you got all the... on the interview I saw, you said you got all the...
Oh, yeah, I used to work at Granada for 2 years. I can't remember what I did there. But like, I got given my own office, and I didn't like deserve an office. I think I just got moved. And it was brilliant because I had, like... You know, first time I had an office and I was away from everyone, it's just wonderful facilities to do my own stuff. And I was saying, when I was writing the time waster letters, these silly letters I used to write, I happened to find this book called Directory of British Associations, which was like 600, 700 pages. And I spent like a few weeks secretly photocopying the entire book and just writing letters. And then the printer was just outside my boss's office, so I press print, then run before they'd see the kind of mental drawings of scarecrows and things like that. But yeah, I think, yeah, and we did it around then. We made it as a short film, first of all, yeah.
I wonder how much, because I know we used to work at BBC Light Entertainment when I had no money. I'd use the photocopier to photocopy all my programmes for Edinburgh. So I'd do like a programme of Rara Rasputin or whatever it was.
Terrified anyone's going to come in.
Yeah, and do thousands and thousands
of the whole time.
Most of which I didn't give out because not many people came to the show. That I did then reuse them as, I used that as printing paper.
But I remember when I worked at Channel 4 for a couple of years as a commissioning editor, we had made the short film for Look Around You, and then it was like on VHS, and the only way of getting around was to give people VHSs, and we just made it for fun. But then we thought, oh, wouldn't it be good if we could like get a TV show with it? And so we thought if we give people the VHS, that's how the buzz will, you know, spread. So people would come and pitch me shows, and then I'd somehow make the conversation go to my thing, and they go, I think I've got a VHS here. And what I had about 40 VHSs, but their labels face down so you couldn't see them under my TV, and I would try and take one out without knocking them all so they'd all spill, and you'd just see, look around you, like I'm really sad. I think I've got one here.
Bit sad. So did you meet Peter on, was it on Space or something like that you met Peter? How did you get involved with Peter?
No, I was involved in another terrible thing. I worked on a thing which was called You Are Here, which is a thing I co-wrote with Mark Freeland, who runs BBC Comedy, Matt Lucas and David Williams in 1998. It was like kind of like The League of Gentlemen, but before The League of Gentlemen, but much worse than The League of Gentlemen, because they did it brilliantly. And I met him there. Okay. And we bonded over a thing in the evening we used to call Pot Club.
And can you tell us more about that? I feel it's my duty.
We would collect pots.
Okay. Okay. I think I got it. So, I'm very excited to talk to you about, this is a leaping forward a bit, but you worked on South Park for a few episodes, which must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a bit scary. Actually, it was the one when I worked on when they did the one where they got death threats for... The Muhammad thing.
Oh,
so that was funny because, it was funny. I was staying in a hotel at the time, actually. I remember this. So we were working on that. And you're in a kind of glass, big glass office. And I mean, all the time you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, it's South Park. Oh my God, they're doing the voices. Oh my God, he just did Cartman. And it was during they did the first episode. It was a two-parter, and they had death threats. I don't know if you know, they did Muhammad. They were going to show Muhammad, and they didn't show Muhammad, and then they had proper, like, death threats. And then while we were in there, one of the office runners banged on the glass, you know, double doors in there. He wanted to say talk, and I think Trey Parker went, not now, not now. And he banged again. He said, not now. And he went away and wrote on a piece of paper in red and stuck it on the glass. He went, the FBI are here. I thought that was brilliant. And when I went to my hotel in the evening, I went to bed, and then I remember getting up in the middle of the night just checking it was locked, my door, just in case a terrorist came in. I just have enough time to leap from my balcony 7 floors up.
They can't get through locks, terrorists.
They can't.
With their bombs.
Yeah.
they're not as subtle as that. So what was the process of writing a South Park episode? How does that work?
Well, it's really Trey Parker does it all, really. It's Trey and Matt and the producer and the three writers, and you sit in the room, and it's weird. It's you get in at 10 in the morning, you have like a nice breakfast, and then you leave at 1 in the afternoon, 3 hours.
Right.
And no one... The other writers said, "Don't you? It's so weird how this show is done, and you don't. No one has a laptop. There's no one writes anything down. Right. And Trey just walks around the table, making you nervous, round and round. And he's clearly a genius. And he just wants 3 ideas. He wants 3 scenes. That's all he wants.
Yeah.
And then once he's got those, and you know, jokes are made and blah 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 blah. But he doesn't nothing. You think, oh, he'll remember that. Nothing ever written down.
Right.
And at the end, like by about 12:30, he'll write down 3 things. I don't know. Cartman is ill. The doctor comes. Cartman's mum. Blah blah blah. And then he goes, okay, you can go now. He says, it's 12:30. Been here 2.5 hours. And then you have lunch and you go home. And then when you come in the next day, the writers say, watch what happened now. And then Trey will come in and say, okay, do you want to see what happened? What we did after you left yesterday. And then you follow them into the edit suite, and then it's not just he's written it. You never see a script. It's just finished. The 3 scenes are animated, voice, music, done. It's weird. It's all done in 6 days. Unbelievable.
Yeah, because I mean, it's so topical. Even when we see them here, you're going to go, how have they got this out so fast?
And apparently, they're millionaires. Seriously. Pound millionaires.
Pound millionaires.
Pound sterling. Sterling. What is sterling anyway? What is sterling?
It's something very important. Is it something to do with silver? I don't know.
Sterling.
Is there some silver somewhere that's equal to a pound? There's a pound
maybe
of silver
is.
Somewhere.
Maybe there is.
And you can go and look at it. And then they go,
there anyone in from the Royal Mint?
There probably is.
The Royal
Mint seems unlikely. Statistically. Anyone know what pound sterling is from the Wikipedia nerds? It's the gold standard.
Shut up,
Beardy. That could be anyone, but let's face it. That could have been anyone. That's not a good insult for my audience. Be quiet, woman without a beard. Well, you know what it definitely is, and what is it?
Oh, I don't know.
You shut up then. Coming here, all superior, thinking, I'm going to get you on film for that. Yeah, you probably were anyway, because the camera was pointing. That's him there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the Marmite thing comes from. I think that's like one of the maybe.
I either love or hate people. That's, I can understand
fair
that.
Fair enough.
I can understand that. Well, let's talk about Robin Cooper, and I'm going to ask you some. I've got some new emergency questions as well, but I'll ask about Robin Cooper. I owned both of these.
Thank you. I think
me and my wife owned a copy each of the first one. And what I noticed, though, and my interest about the time-wasted letters, on the front page, on the cover of the first one, it says, "This is the funniest book I've ever read, Matt Lucas, Little Britain."
Yep.
Then on the cover of the second one, it says, it's different.
What was it going to say?
I fucked up. Well, I thought it said the same thing. But it says, even funnier than the funniest book I've ever read.
Ah, you see.
Damn it.
He's one step ahead of you, Matt Lucas.
I didn't. I misread it. I had a whole bit worked out about Matt Lucas.
Oh, do it anyway. As if.
No, do it.
I
thought it was the same quote, and I thought you pulled the same quote off. I think the one inside it said,
What was it going to... Where was it going to...
Sorry, I'm going to edit this bit out because I look stupid. I was going to think he had like some kind of... I thought you just used the same quote twice, like people do on their books. And then...
No,
just,
why would you think that? It's completely different.
Every book Matt Lucas reads, he just thinks he's got some kind of memory deficiency where he doesn't remember the last book he read.
And I'm too scared to say, Matt, sorry, it's the same quote.
But they're very funny. We talked about the clarinet letter in the first one. I think what I like about it is that, you know, basically as Robin Cooper... So did Robin Cooper start as the letters first, or were you doing both the phone calls?
I think I just wrote to... I found this book and of a British associations, and I think it cost like £600. I thought, well, I'm going to photocopy that for free, definitely. And it just had, you know, the British Button Society and the Leicester Button Society, like variants of every type of thing. And I just thought I'd write. I think the first one was was it Scarecrow?
It was a beef scarecrow. Yeah. And then they questioned whether
I know why. It was a friend of mine got Mark Freeland who does BBC comedy. I used to be friend, you know, work with. He sent me. He said, I haven't had any posts at home for about 3 months. The only one I keep getting is this garden catalogue. And he sent me it. And then I thought I'd write to them. And it was that I'm a garden furniture designer. And then I make scarecrows and have a range of scarecrows made from beef. And they wrote back saying, thank you for your beef scarecrows. And I replied, I said, I must have made a typo. I actually meant, of course, Beale scarecrows. B-E-L, no such thing. And then I think their letter was like, Beale scarecrows, with like drawings of... They were based on Roman themes, weren't they?
They're based on Leviticus and Roman.
Leviticus in distress was one of them. I don't remember.
But they're very... But a lot of the people who respond are very encouraging. I think like they... I don't know if they realise it's a joke and they just are enjoying the fact... Because if you're working in a job and your job is to answer letters, a lot of it's very boring.
Yes.
So if you got one, you think this person's a bit crazy or having a laugh... I can waste some time as well pretending I'm doing my job but actually having some fun in return. For some of them, I think.
Yeah,
some
I reckon it could be a couple, yeah.
Some of them are genuinely annoyed with you and hate you.
Oh, yeah, there are a few that definitely say you never contact our association ever again. The British Colour Makers Association. That was a colour I'd invented. But it was called Gream. And when they wrote back, they went I don't know if they did it on purpose or they went green, and then they realised they'd just written green, and then with a pen made the N into an M.
Yes.
And it was all about... I remember it was about... it's impossible to explain the colour because you can't put into words, but I will try. Weirdly, I remember this.
Okay.
And it was green is like a field of undiluted emotion, cut clean with steel scissors, wielded by a fragrant farm girl who has just written a belated happy birthday card to her dearest nephew. That was it. And then I think it was... they asked me to send colour swaps. I thought, I've got to invent a colour now and do this. So I thought, well, I can't do that, obviously, because of it could, you know, people could steal this colour. But what I'll do is, you're based in Oldham, and I looked it up, and there was this famous bridge there. I will paint the 26th hoist or whatever it is, railing, with green. And then they said, this would be an act of criminal damage and we cannot condone. Please do not contact us ever again.
I mean, you know, but on the off chance that you had created a new colour, that was a big step for them to just dismiss you. They could have said, do it somewhere else.
I should have gone up and just painted some weird splurgy colour there.
Just imagine how much money they could have made out of you. Yeah. Oh. But to the lady with the scarecrows, it's very they're encouraged and they say, please send details of the products. But then you do it. Then you do a bird trap thing.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah.
You had an idea of trapping birds in basically a homemade Venus flytrap called
a torpendulator. That sounds sort of horrible. It was like a bird thing, but it wasn't mentioned that it contains quick-setting glue. It's attracted and...
What is it?
I can't remember what it was, but it was something horrible.
It's right near the front.
So there's
a bag you can throw the bird away in afterwards.
Oh, yeah. It was... That's it. Torpendula fixed in flowerbed vegetable patch by ropes. Syrup made from camphor, petrol, iodine and cream mix poured in. After 24 hours, I don't know why, birds and gulls become attracted to odour and fly in to investigate. so I shouldn't be laughing at myself.
What I kind of like about it is that it's not even, it's connected, it's sort of entrapping birds that weren't necessarily any problem in your garden. they're attracted by the thing to be killed. It's like you can't get, it's just going to be a never-ending process of dead birds.
It's quite a sweet little bird. Bird triggers lid to close, enveloping the bird. Wings are glued together. And then it says, after 10 to 15 minutes, bird is disposed of in bag. And what do they say? I can't remember this. Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing myself. We regard ourselves as a bird-friendly catalogue. I feel that this product is particularly cruel to birds and thus in no way suitable to be considered for selection. With regards, Emma Hutt. She didn't even sign her name. She just put a, wrote her name.
Unlike the beef scarecrows, which they were considering.
They were considering.
Wanted to see more.
I went too far.
These are very good books. If you get a chance to pick them up, they really are the kind of thing that you... I mean, you've got quotes from every single comedian in the world here.
And Lee
like,
Francis, your favourite.
And Lee Francis, what is Lee
It's a toilet book, you know.
I like Lee Francis. Just wish he wasn't as successful as he is. It is. I was at, you know, it's one of those ones where you're laughing on the tube and then embarrassed because you're laughing so much.
What, while reading or just laughing on the
just
tube?
Just laughing. Oh, right, yeah. Laughing, remembering afterwards. I'm going to ask you, I've got some new emergency questions.
Yeah. What would you rather ones?
No. If you had to go for a week's holiday with one of the puppets from Spitting Image, which would you choose? And bear in mind, the puppet would choose the holiday destination. So what I'm envisaging here is that the holiday would be with the puppet and the puppeteer as well. One of the original puppets.
So the puppet is
and the person doing the voice.
Right, the whole
but
time.
They would, in all the whole time, they would stay in character as that.
So and I wouldn't see the puppet. It would be like a shelf or a, yeah, a unit.
Yeah.
Right.
And you wouldn't be able to talk to the puppeteer or the part of the holiday wouldn't be like Steve Coogan would have when, at the end of the evening, you could have a drink with Steve Coogan.
Like
he would just be there doing the Jeffrey Howe voice or whoever you chose.
Oh, Jeffrey Howe.
Definitely
Thatcher.
Yeah.
Because she's the only person I can 65% imitate. That's it.
Okay. But she wouldn't like that if you...
Oh, you're right.
I'm
not doing the voice. Yeah. You're definitely Thatcher. Yeah, I think it would be fun. Yeah, because she'd be fucking annoying, wouldn't she?
Where do you think you would go on holiday with...
Did Margaret Thatcher... Did she ever go on holiday?
She didn't take holidays. She didn't sleep.
I reckon it would be somewhere in England, but somewhere... Eastbourne, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
Eastbourne, what do you think?
Well,
Eastbourne with the...
Not Brighton, I reckon. Definitely not Brighton. Good answer. That's the first answer to that question.
And would we like... And I'd share a room as well, so it'd be just full on.
Yeah. Would you have sex with the puppet if it came up?
It depends. Yeah. If the mood was right.
Do you think having sex with a Spitting Image puppet,
of
if you're
friend.
Married, should count as cheating? Or do you think that is... I think that would be allowed. If it was Margaret Thatcher and you had sex with it...
Well, what would
you went
wife
back
say?
To your wife and... I mean, if it was me, I wouldn't choose Margaret Thatcher, but I might choose...
Who would you choose?
To have sex... Because they were mainly... I'd probably have the Annika Rice puppet. I don't fancy Annika Rice, but I fancy the Annika Rice Spitting Image puppet.
Right, yeah.
But if I could have sex with that, that's not cheating, is it? Because it's not actually Annika Rice or a human being.
No, that's not cheating. No, that's,
so
that's
my wife
just...
couldn't complain about that.
No, definitely. There's no grounds for complaint for that.
Good. I'm glad we're
I think it'd be Margaret Thatcher, yeah. Because I think her voice is just funny, just generally, just that.
Steve
Nayland.
I
won't do my impression. Go on.
Steve Nayland did the voice of that one.
He did?
I think so. I think maybe Steve.
No, but I used to do phone calls, as you know, silly phone calls, but I once phoned the House of Lords as Thatcher, before she died. And House of Lords, and they thought it was... They said, oh, hello, Baroness. And it's basically asking if I'd left my bag there. And they look for, and they said, what's, and can I tell you what's in the bag? And there's just this list. And there were two apples in there that Jeffrey Howe, because he, do you know he grows apples? And a pippin and a cox, I think. And they wrote it all down. And there was a table tennis bat. And it was like, I asked them if we play table tennis. Yeah, no thing. I talked about a bit about like how to spin the ball a bit. And they looked for it. They said, can we call you back? And there was an excuse why they couldn't call me back. I'm not with my phone. And then I called back and they couldn't find it. But yeah, they were really upset they couldn't find it. Yes, Baroness. Sorry, Baroness.
It's unbelievable that they would not...
And yeah, there's no...
There were no check,
you think
like
there's like a code word you'd say, like Lamborghini 9. Lamborghini 9.
It depends how late good, into it? Just phoning up. Life it was, though, because she obviously was she went a bit doolally towards the end, mm-hmm. so they can't be rude to her.
No, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you were playing. That's what you were playing
yeah.
on there.
Yeah. But I was mainly trying to, you know, tease her and other sufferers of. What did she have?
She had Alzheimer's.
That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to insult.
Yeah. I've got another new emergency question.
Go on.
Why do elephants have such low rates of cancer? In your opinion.
Oh, in my opinion. Because there are, you know, there's the normal opinion.
Yeah. They've got 5% of elephants get cancer, but 25% of humans get cancer.
Mm.
So that's a little bit backfired.
Maybe is it something to do with like lack of smoking and passive smoking?
Well, it is partly
because they're quite a low smoking animal group compared to other animals.
Well, I would also say it's probably to do with the fact that a lot of wild creatures die before they get very old. They get picked off.
But, yeah, elephants live quite old. They live to like 400, don't they? Or something like that.
Well,
400, 500.
That is part of the answer, so you got that partly correct. It's also because they have 20 TP53 genes, whereas humans only have one. It's basically a sort of smoke
20,
alarm.
20, 22, something
yeah,
like that.
Somewhere around there.
So you've read Foster as well, yeah?
It's like a smoke detector of
you've
cancer.
Read a lot of Foster, the elephant expert.
Well, I just read that online. But can you name another animal that is very cancer resistant?
Yeah, millipede.
Might be.
Yeah. No, it is. It really is.
The naked mole rat is my answer.
Is that right?
Yeah, that is very barely.
So,
gets
what
cancer.
Is the highest cancer? What's the most cancer-ridden?
It's not like I know everything about cancer.
Well, you
animals.
Seem to know a bit about
I've
it.
I just know three facts that I've written down. Okay. I thought it'd be interesting to know.
But what would you imagine would be then?
The most cancer, I think, well, human being. And
no,
then,
we're not us. Okay. We know that's obvious.
Chimpanzee.
It could be.
Especially the ones that they have in laboratories smoking.
Yeah, probably
that. I think it's probably the ones that, or just all the rats they inject with cancer. That's probably the highest.
Actually, butterflies, 100% deaths of cancer. Butterfly cancer is the highest.
Yeah.
Yeah, with butterflies.
Good.
That is a fact.
Sport is intrinsically stupid. Discuss.
But I agree. I mean, okay.
Well,
it is. I mean, it is.
It is.
So I used to really like football.
Yeah.
And then I like it less now. It's just too long as well to watch. It's 90 minutes.
Yeah.
If it was 60 minutes or 40 minutes...
Just watch the highlights.
Yeah. Even that, they're too long. Maybe 40 seconds. Maybe a 40-second game of football would be good. With like a faster ball, it just goes... You know, that would be good.
With a ball that could kind of went so fast, if it hit another player, it kind of sliced their legs off.
That would be good.
Just went through them.
Yeah, that would be good.
Made a pure light radar energy.
Yeah. And you could do, when you do like the free kicks and the guys are standing in a line, you know, the wall.
Yeah.
And you could line them up and see if the ball would go through them lengthways.
Yeah.
That would be good. I'd watch that. I imagine you're you love sport.
I love all sports.
Yeah, you love all sports.
Snooker. I like listening to football from outside the ground.
Right. Yeah, that's good.
That's
you know what I always
hobbies.
Thought would be good
yeah.
for radio? Squash.
Yeah.
It'd just be the squeaks the whole thing. That would be fantastic.
Trying with no to commentary.
Well, also commentary as well. Okay, he just hit the ball. It's just like that, and just squeaking, the constant squeaking, and people go, like that. They don't do it. They should do squash on the radio. 5 Live. This is on 5 Live, isn't it?
It will be.
So this will be after the squash or before the squash. Or in the middle of the squash. Squashed in the middle of the squash.
Okay,
I'll shut up now.
If you were the Prime Minister,
even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great
great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Would you use nuclear weapons?
What, all the time?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a shame. If I was Prime Minister, I would use them straight away. Because why buy them if you're not going to do it? I reckon 40% of the time, they wouldn't fire back.
Right, yeah.
So I think you're like, you could just win the world. Because I think they'd see, if you just got here and went bang, then the Russians and everyone else and ISIS, they'd look at their screens and go, oh, it must be a mistake.
ISIS screens. Yeah.
It must be a mistake.
We'll
ring up and just check it. Because if you get there, if you see that, A, if you launched nuclear weapons, I think most people, they're there as a deterrent, right? I think you'd have to be a bit of a prick to fire back. Right? Because if you fire back, you're basically saying, I'm going to destroy humanity. If I was sitting there and the nuclear weapons were coming to me, I'd say, well played.
Well played. And so, yeah.
Because it was a deterrent.
So that's what you think as Prime Minister. Yeah, you just arrive, first day, and then he takes his, and here he is, a momentous day. Richard Herring is bawdy Marmite comedian who somehow has been elected. He's never stood. He didn't even stand for Prime Minister. He's elected, and he takes momentous day, and he takes his desk, and you just open the drawer and immediately just press the button. Yeah. That's straight away, the red button.
But I'd do it secretly. I wouldn't do it on the TV.
Right, not on TV.
Because then they're coming.
They'd know.
And then they look. They'd either go, well, if we fire back, we're destroying the human race. Okay. So do I want that on my conscience?
No.
B, maybe it's a mistake. So I think 40% of the time they wouldn't. 40% of the time they wouldn't fire back.
So you're just banking them respecting you. Yeah. That's not a bad way to begin your prime ministerhood. Just gaining respect from, and then you can go to the meetings, and they just really respect you.
They've
all got bits of their face missing and stuff like that.
And then I think we spent all the money on them, and it's a shame not
might
to
as well use them.
Or just don't have them and pretend we've got them.
That's boring and a lot of work. It's just easier just to press the button. I'm with you on that. I could be your vice prime minister. Yeah.
Well, because probably you need two people because you have to do that thing where you both turn a key at the same time. So you'd need to convince someone else.
Lamborghini 9. Yeah. Boom.
I would definitely do it. I reckon, But I genuinely, if I was the prime minister and they were being fired at me, I wouldn't fire back. So it's don't make me prime minister is what I'm saying. Because either I launch all the nuclear weapons or I fail to respond and I've just said that and the Russians will be listening to this and go,
why would you
hope
fail?
He becomes prime minister.
Why would you fail? I mean, if you're prepared to kill...
Well, because if I killed everyone, but then everyone's dead, isn't it? You'd have to be a real chump and a real party pooper to go, I'm going to fire back. Because then everyone in the world's dead and all life is wiped out. Whereas if just the ones come in, Britain's wiped out.
So party pooper is the thing, is the term to use.
I wouldn't want history to judge
me. The nuclear party pooper, Richard Herring.
History that would last 4 more minutes would judge me and go, oh, why did he fire back? What a prick. Why did he have to be a prick about it? We fired ours, we won. We fired them first, so therefore we won. No one thought we'd fire them. My worry about nuclear weapons is like having guns in the house, isn't it? They're more likely to go wrong for you. One's bound to go off, right? One's bound to go off.
So I know Richard was saying before that he keeps guns in the house. He showed me a picture of his baby. Just guns. Baby with a gun.
But, if you've got...
But the baby holding the gun like this to his head...
It's nearly always in America. It is like kids will pick up a gun and shoot someone, or like an intruder will get your gun and shoot you. It's the same with nuclear weapons. There's been about 20 cases where nuclear weapons have been in fires and stuff. And
in fires?
In America, there's been a one where a thing carrying live nuclear weapons crashed and it was all on fire, and they were all going.
But they never actually go off, do they?
It's gonna, well, they will do one time, and it's more likely, I think, than them firing at us that ours will just go off and then
so you
we'll
might
die.
As well just use them now.
Yeah, so get rid
right,
of them.
Yeah, I'm with
because they're
that.
Dangerous, get rid of
honestly,
them.
Honestly, I think if you stood for that, that is your platform, you could you could probably get in power. I'd vote for you.
Okay.
Done.
Good, good. One vote.
One vote.
and yeah, we should. Well, let's talk about more about the Robin Cooper phone calls because we talked about the. I was listening to a couple. There's a very enjoyable one you did about UKIP when you rang up UKIP.
Oh yeah, what
offices,
was that?
Oh yeah, was you it asked, when you I just asked? Had lots of rumours about Nigel Farage. And again, it was what was interesting was the woman. Some was going, no, that's just nonsense. Yeah. And then some was going, well, I don't know about that. That sounds unlikely.
Was it that? Is it true that he goes to the toilet in the pub?
Yeah.
He doesn't use the loo in his house. He just goes in the pub. He's always in the pub, isn't he? And was it? Did he? Wasn't it something that he burnt a dog? A light?
Yeah,
dog?
Burnt dogs. And
burnt
she went,
dogs.
No, she went, no, that's definitely,
definitely
not, true.
Not true.
Does he cuddle his wife?
What?
And then she said, does he cuddle his wife? She said yes. Does she cuddle in too much or something?
No, when she said when he's at home and he needs to use the loo, he uses the loo at home. And when he's in the pub and needs to use the loo, he uses the loo in the pub. That was how she described. Oh right, okay.
But there are a lot of fun. But was it a Robin Cooper thing with the Gordon Brown, the Tangerine Gate? Was this?
Yeah, that was weird. That was sometimes I just want to make a stupid phone call. It's ridiculous. So sometimes my wife will come downstairs. She'll be like, I'm just on the phone, and I was phoning. I think it was LBC, who I'm now banned from. They know my number,
right?
And I can't give my house number, my number, and my wife's mobile. Banned. And doesn't work. And so I was phoning. Normally I don't really think of what I'm going to say, but I remember it was all about, I turned it on, it was about Gordon Brown. It was the time when he was meant to be a bully. There's rumours he'd been bullying. And all I had in my kitchen, I was phoning, there was like a lemon in a bowl. I remember that. And I was phoned, and then I said, I thought, well, how am I going to get on? And the operator asked, what do you want to talk about? And I said, well, he came to my place of work and lost his temper and went mad. And you think, well, I'm going to get on. They said, hold on, we'll put you on. I thought, well, what am I going to say? And I basically said that I work, was often in a lamination factory, and Gordon Brown came, he was very nice, and then he got one of his underlings, gave him some message, and he lost his temper. And he was eating a tangerine. That was it. It was a tangerine. He was eating a tangerine at the time, and he got so angry, he threw the tangerine, and he called the person a citric idiot. And the tangerine landed in the lamination machine and broke the whole machine. And anyway, so I did that, and I thought, well, that was funny. Great. I'll take that and I'll put that online, and I put it online. And then about a week later, I got sort of on Twitter or emails. This is when I it was about 1 in the morning, I was laughing myself to sleep, but this story got picked up, and it was in the Financial Times, it was on in the Sun, like the Times, that, you know, that did he throw a tangerine into a lamination machine. And I don't know if you've seen, like, online, like I think it's like a Hong Kong news agency that make the animated stories of the news. They did that. And throwing the tangerine, like that. Yeah, so, yeah. It was called Tangerine Gate. It's bigger than Watergate, bigger than Watergate.
And did you... Was that after the kind of stories of his bad temper come
out?
Yeah,
yeah, it was just after then, yeah.
Yeah, so it was...
I was quite proud of that one.
But then it's interesting in what people will believe. So, like, there's been a lot of kind of crazy news stories that we've discussed in previous podcasts in this series about David Cameron or whatever, or, you know, or just general... people now can say something and that's enough... for it to be true, which in the past, if you said something about someone, people had to go and kind of research it and check it. It definitely happened.
I always wanted to start a roomie, years ago, I don't know why, but it was just so sort of bland, and that Moira Stewart, the newsreader, had severe gout. Don't know why, just thought that was a good, weird rumour. She's got terrible gout. It's sort of believable enough, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
It's just.
But you might hit on the truth in these ways. You know, what if Gordon Brown came and said, "I did throw a tangerine into a laminating machine"? How did they find out?
It was
out
a
about
naval
this?
Orange, actually.
But is it, well, if you've got a few hours and days to spare, I mean, what you don't get paid for doing these
cubicles, it's just for your own expensive hobby. Yeah. So I like doing that, and I don't know why I do them. It's stupid, but I watch a lot of the religious TV channels, which are between about number 587 and 595 on Sky, and they just have sometimes they're on and it goes. Call and has their number and your phone, and sometimes they answer and you're just on television. I mean, there's no filter, just on television. Even I'm shocked. And it's like, yes, what can I? Yes, brother. They often call me because the voice I do. Yes, sister. Oh, I'm not a woman. I'm a man. And there's a lot of that. Yeah. So I got. But there was a preacher on who since has been put in prison for child abduction. I didn't realise. And Gilbert Dayer Ministries, I used to phone him a lot. And one of them was, I think it was about the pain in my buttocks. And I just get him to say the word buttocks about 55 times and praying for them. Yeah, getting them praying for stuff is good.
Well, I saw one and it was, I don't know, it must have been in the UK somehow. It was a religious people and there were black people and they were talking in Ethiopian, you were saying. I don't know if they were Ethiopian. But it was like, you went on for quite a long time about your friends, and then they said, "We're going to do a bit now in our own language, so you can't be. You'll have to go." Like their way to get rid of you was to go. Yeah, there's a bit coming up now.
No, it was an Ethiopian language program, but I managed to get on and talk to them in English. And it was, you know, they've got 1 hour to talk in their language, and I obviously using up their time. But yeah, there was one man. I don't know if he spoke English. He was really sweet, and he looked like a guru type, and. I went on and I went, hello. And he was, hello. And then he started speaking. It might have been Arabic, actually, and or Punjab. And he was really sweet. And I went, hello, how are you? And he answered. And it was just a sort of 3-minute, him just smiling at me, not understanding me, understanding him. But it was sort of really a bit tragic as well, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, but they're not nasty. You know, there's a lot of prank phone
calls.
No,
I mean only the bomb threats, though, apart from those ones.
But they're quite benign.
Yeah, they're
and
benign.
Just weird. I mean, it is about wasting people's time.
It's
really,
just no. What it is really is just. I just like the fact that this conversation existed. Yeah. So we are talking about. I did one to the London Eye that I was raising money. I think the charity was called General Awareness, and it was just that we've had this conversation existed, not to be horrible or like, you know, if they're like. Really bad at their job, I won't use it. I don't want to show anyone up. But it was about that we were going to, can we paint the pods in the London Eye black to symbolise... It was also for a disease called Serafantasi meticulicolitis. And it was, can we paint the pods black so when people are in there, they feel the suffering? And they said no, and said, well, the other person... His name's David Fibrosol. I think they're little sachets of stuff for your stomach, actually. I got that name from him. He was going to eat paint. But it was just David Fibrosol said he'd eat paint. She's like, okay. Just this image of this man just eating paint out of a tub to raise awareness.
And did your sandwiches turn up today, by the way? Have you had anything to eat?
Oh, God.
I just was meant to ask you at the beginning, because you haven't eaten anything.
No.
Because you came out with any money
Well,
today.
I came to town a bit early because I've just had a baby. And
who hasn't? It's easy.
And whatever. And
that's all you have to do.
No, actually, we didn't do that method. Actually, no, we didn't. And,
and it's even easy. It's just that then. That's
yeah. It's just like that onto the bed, rolling it. Go on, ma'am. Sorry. I come to town and because I need to get a shirt because I'm going somewhere smart and don't have a nice shirt.
Yeah.
And I actually haven't bought any clothes about 2 years and I can do this now. I go 2 hours early to town and I went to town, I went to the shop and I found the shirt and some T-shirts and things and they were ready to pay. And I realised I'd come to town with no money, nothing, not a penny. And I didn't have any money left on my Oyster card. So I thought, I don't even know how I'm going to get home. And I really haven't any lunch. So I phoned my wife and said, any way you can get me any money somehow? So she put money in a jiffy bag, in a bike or a car.
Yeah.
She said, I can do that. I said, great, to send to the theatre. It still hasn't turned up. And then I thought, text her, any way you could send me a couple of turkey sandwiches? And she texts back, okay. do you want ketchup with them? So, no, it's okay. But they haven't turned up. I don't know if they've turned up.
We could have, I could have given you some money.
I was too ashamed. I was going to ask you, can I borrow some money? But yeah, I thought I'd be too ashamed. Or borrow from you guys. I would definitely, you know, if I could borrow from you guys.
It's a scam. We've worked out this complicated scam. Rather than making you look like a crazy person. It's come out with a...
You give me £40 now.
I've come out
now.
With no money. I didn't understand. It's the first time I've been out in the public for 20 years. I didn't know we needed money.
I looked in my pockets. Normally, I have hundreds of pounds on me.
It was quite embarrassing in the shop because we, you know, he rung it all up or whatever. And I said, oh... I don't have my wallet. It's like, I don't know what they think of you. Just wasting their time or you're weird or... And I go, and I went, oh, my wife took my wallet. I'm going to kill her. I said that. And I, oh, is your wife nearby? Yes, I'll go and say, oh, do you want me to hold the items for you? So I went, yes. He said, what's your name? And I just went, Philip. I don't know why I did that. So then I was walking around town for like an hour. I had nothing to do. I didn't eat anything. I was quite thirsty.
So there's a man waiting with your shirt. Yeah. Just waiting for Philip to come
Philip.
Back. Probably won't go. Probably his shit's just, about to end. I can't go until Philip comes back.
He can't
back.
Close the store. Philip, where's Philip? So then I was walking around town, and then I thought, well, I passed the photographer's gallery. I'll go in there. It was £3. I didn't even have £3. I thought it was free. Uh-huh. So then I walked on, passed the homeless guy, asked for money, went. Huh. And then the best bit was though, I passed the theatre where they've got the Commitments on. Yeah. Obviously. Worst music in the world, and but what was good is I've never known how to. I always thought Commitments. Is it two M's, two T's, and it's one T. So that was good. So I've found that out now.
So you've had an exciting day out in the city,
and that is commitment to you. Right?
And so let's talk about Friday night dinner. Do people confuse it with Grandma's House a lot?
No, they did at the beginning because they said, "Oh, there's a Jewish one," and now there's another Jewish one.
So what's it like working with Rebecca Front?
No, I think you just got confused. Yeah. It must be all the Marmite.
No, so it's well, is it very much autobiographical about
it's
you?
Sort of a little bit. I mean, the idea was that, it was more about like going home. I used to do like go home to Friday night dinner quite a lot with my brother, and we just sort of revert to being children when we go in. And I thought, well, that's a kind of universal thing, I think. And also, dads all go a bit weird. My dad's. Yeah, a bit weird. And it was so a few things that happened there that gave me the idea. One of them was once when I was, years ago this, while I was at home and I was washing up and my dad was in the room, like watching TV or whatever, and he was eating. And I promise you, he just took a swig out of the bottle of ketchup. He just picked the ketchup up on his own, didn't look around, and just drank from the ketchup. Then did that with his finger around it to clean it, going round like that, and then put the lid on. And I was so stunned. I didn't say anything. I told my brother, and that was. And my dad's denied it. I never did that. Things like that, and just that, and once finding in his office a sticky note with the word penis written on it, but spelt wrong. P-E-N-U-S. Pinus. So, the other thing, also, me and my brother, we used to do things to my dad, like, when he'd watch TV, he'd just become, like, totally absorbed in the television, and you couldn't, if you called him, he wouldn't hear. So we used to get the remote control, and this is, we had a TV where, like, if you press it, you wouldn't see the things on the screen. And over the course of, like, 5 minutes, we would make the sound go quieter and quieter, and then it was like, London today, it would be the quietest voice you've ever, you couldn't hear it. And it would be silent, and my dad would still be just tuned into it. And then over the next course, the next point, we'd just do it till it was like at 60, the loudest TV in the world, and he'd be watching it. And then after about half a minute, he'd go, oh my God! He would freak out, he'd realise we'd done that. That, and any time my mum had her hair cut in the house, we would take the hair bits and put them in my dad's water. So the whole meal, he'd just be picking his tongue. So it was those things, I thought, oh, well, I kind of wanted to do something that reflects sort of bullying kids, basically. That reflects that, really.
Well, it's like the way as adults you still retain the relationship you have as kids, I think, isn't it? When you go back to your parents, you revert to being teenagers again.
And I know when you go home, you're made to remove your clothes. Your parents are naturists, aren't naturists, aren't they?
They very much are. Yeah. Well, everyone in Cheddar is. There aren't any clothes. There aren't any shops. That's why we don't have any money or credit cards, so we can't buy any more. So they just rot away.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, the first series was pretty autobiography.
Yeah.
Autobiography. I can't say the word, but that. About yourself, it means. And then... You sort of go, I can't just do that. I have to. They have got to, the characters then become their own things, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how'd your family feel about it? Because I wrote a thing about my family as well. Some of them liked it and some of them didn't like it as much. So do your family.
They liked it, but there's occasionally, why did you say that? I never did that. And, well, you did. You did drink ketchup. Yeah. So, yeah. It's occasionally, though. No, they've been really good. Yeah. Yeah. They have been, actually. They've been. I mean, it was just I based the dad character on my dad because my dad just has a way of saying things that don't connect. So one thing he said that was weird, I'd heard that someone had died and they'd been to the funeral, or I thought they'd been to the funeral, and I said to my dad, it's just so strange, I said, how was the funeral? And my dad said, lovely. I went, lovely. And my mum went, Michael, you didn't even go to the funeral. And he went, yeah, but he doesn't know that. I was like, what does that mean? Why would you lie, say you went to the funeral because you wouldn't know if I went or not? So yeah, it was that I want to sort of capture that kind of that thing.
Well, I think it's, but everyone's. I mean, I assume everyone's got that, or just everyone I know has insane families because it's you're in this little enclosed unit and you know everything about each other and you're very. And so there's a lot of. And you pretend, I think like a lot of families pretend, isn't it? Once you come out of the house, you're pretending you're different than you were inside the house.
Yeah, totally.
So that's presumably why so many comedies are about.
Yeah,
that
I just
subject.
Wanted it to be really, really, really specific.
Yeah.
Just, and they talk in their own way and they have their own phrases. And it was that. And then when I thought of the idea of having a neighbour who's scared of his own dog, then I thought that'll be like the added sort of quirk thing to it. Yeah. Mark Heap, who's amazing. Because no one can act with him because he's so funny. Like when they open the door. He's funny, Mark, because he's obviously mad and brilliant, but people laugh the whole time during the scene, and he actually gets quite annoyed. And there was a scene when Simon Bird laughed, and Mark just whacked him around the head in the middle of the scene. It was fantastic.
And which one are you? Are you Simon Bird or Tom Rosenthal?
Actually, the boys aren't really that us, so I'm probably the mum.
Okay. And is anything happening with Tavu? How's that going?
That's like a religion me and Peter invented. And, well, we're meant to be writing a script for HBO. Well, we are writing a script for HBO. It's taken us so long to write. Yeah. I think they're probably... Hopefully they're not listening to this. But, yeah, it's a bit late.
It's difficult writing scripts, though. So this is a religion that you've created that's been a sort of a vaguely like...
Well, it was me and Peter always used to imagine that our religion, don't know why, was called Tavu, and that God was called Tavu. And then we... created a website called tavu.com to make ourselves laugh, we created like a Wikipedia on it and we started writing the religion just for no money as usual, just a sort of expensive hobby just to make ourselves laugh. And we did it for months and then we realised we had about 500, 600 pages of just nonsense and ceremonies and type of foods they had, Mamphi cakes and things like that and the Tavu's prayer. And we were just really addicted to it. We went a bit insane. And then we made a few little shorts and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. Just no reason for that at all, really.
Yeah. But it's a good way to create. I mean, I do a lot of stuff that's for my own amusement. Some of it I don't put out. I mean, a lot of it I do put out.
But don't
out.
You find that's the best stuff?
Yeah.
You enjoy it the best. You're just doing it because it makes you laugh.
Yeah, well, I think when I used to work with Stu, a lot of the time we'd do things for ages and not even think of... I think like Moon on a Stick, we used to say that to each other all the time and take the piss out of each other in exactly that way. And then one day we went, oh, maybe we should try that in the
that's
double
exactly,
act.
That's,
and you kind of go, and then that's the most successful thing for the double act.
Now, my new thing I'm doing is just to make myself and my wife laugh, is that in the woods near where we live, they have like a nature centre. And it looks like it was... It's just grubby inside, and it's got like pictures that school kids have done. You know, like we visited and we saw this bird, blah, 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 and drawings. And then there'll be a very detailed analysis of bats, and then a graph to show like rainfall. And just it's kind of grotty and smelly and blah, 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 and just old. And I thought, well, I could invent an animal and do a whole section there and just put it in there. So I invented these animals called Sneeples. And I printed them out. This is just a waste of time. Yellowed the paper with like tea bags. Went to Ryman's, got them laminated and stuck them up. And there was like a whole thing about Sneeples and their babies, which are called Tibbies. And there was like a poem about from like 1780 about like brave Sneeple of old or something. And that was there. And it was there for 6 months. And then it got taken out. I was just thinking that the person that was like, Sally, can you put the Sneeples? Anyway, so that's down. So the new one I've got is I'm going to have to do some carpentry, which is going to be hard. But I'm going to get like a, because they have these things in the woods which are like roped up or whatever. Like this has not been touched since 1975. You know, we're growing.
What woods are these you live near?
You know, like we're growing fungus in here or whatever. Not fungus, I don't know. And they've got like a wooden pole with like a wooden board and then the notice on it. So I'm going to get one of those. And I've already printed Sneeple nesting area, right? And it's good. And it's all like telling people not to... There's no ball games. One bit it said no ball games, stroke hoops. Hoops. Yeah, so I'm going to put that out. And it's yellowed. It's all ready to go. Can't wait to. I'm trying to work out how to get like the long bag in with the long pole and to hammer it out. And my wife, who's terrified of these things, is look out. But we're going to use the baby as cover. It couldn't have been us. Maybe we could use the pram to put all the wood in. Yeah, that's what I'll do. Yeah,
prams are very useful. I would say to people who don't have babies, get a pram. Serious, because they're really good. I found like when I've got to carry like. After I'm posting loads of stuff or I was taking loads of books. Your book survived to
well,
the
charity
shop.
You came
here
with a pram, did you?
But you know, you can go out, if you go out, I took out the baby, but there's room under the pram. Yes. I was thinking if I didn't have the baby, there's a lot more room in there for extra stuff. And it makes it very easy to move around heavy objects, I have to say. So
do you ever just take the pram out to go shopping?
I will do, I think, from now on. But I would suggest to people who don't have babies, do that. Buy a pram, like a good sturdy one, and then just fill, and then people look. People come and look in a lot.
Yeah.
And then if it's just full of
just baked beans,
just full of tins or junk. Like I, you know, I sent a big box of programs up to Manchester for my show. Usually I drive up. I went on the train. That's very useful for that because that's very heavy.
You could just push
so,
it.
So you
all
know,
the way.
Buy a pram. They're this expensive ones, but you can get them for like 100 quid, and then you can. I mean, you can get a shopping basket as well, but it's not as good as the pram. Because there's two levels to
it. You can make a kind of, in the shopping then, you can make a kind of sinister baby out of mushrooms. That would be weird, just seeing people looking and seeing like a mushroom baby. I think that would be
I think it'd be good because people are really nosy about babies. And, you know, my baby is very friendly, which annoys me. Because she's always getting people around and stuff. And also just, like, dangerous, because there'll be a terrifying drunk tramp who's, you know, you'd avoid usually, and she's going, yeah, and they go, no, don't get it, no. So she loves all humanity, which, you know, you've got to hate that. So I'm trying to make friends. But it'd be good to have just something terrifying in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, you can use the baby bit if you... Mate, you can't put tins in there, but
it would
you could
be
put
good to have something
soft things around a baby.
Really terrifying in there. Just, like, I don't know what it would be, like... Scissors, lots of scissors. Lots of pointing out, though.
Yeah.
A mass of scissors, but glued together and pointed out. That would be good. Like a clump of, like a 100 scissors.
Or they're inside like a quite a realistic looking baby and then the scissors come out of their face. If you look at it, there's a sort of and it's been
eyes.
It's positioned so you know it will never,
but it comes out really fast and back in again. And so with no evidence that this happened, so just subliminal scissors.
Oh, I think we try and do that in a real baby. I mean, it's easy to have another baby, so
yeah, you've got one already, so you'd use the second one as that.
Yeah,
I'm sure your wife wouldn't mind
some kind of scissor murders. I mean, it should be a good, you know, Jonathan Creek wouldn't know, would it? How do you look? I looked at the baby and then there was a hole in my...
Or even Rosemary and Thyme.
Yeah, good for them.
Which I've sort of begun watching. I started watching it ironically and now sort of quite like... Have you ever seen Rosemary? It's the most mild. It's just the mild. It's mild. My wife would watch it occasionally, just said, oh, it's mild. It's just because her mum would watch it. And I watch it and laugh and take the piss. Now we've started taping it, right? Honestly, we watched the first ever episode. It was pretty good, actually. Felicity Kendall got chased by this woman with a knife, and she was stuck on the balcony. But luckily, the police came. It was good because her partner, Pam Ferris, his son, is a policeman in it.
Oh, that's good.
And he can't act. Okay, Mum, I'm coming as fast as I can.
Is that her real son? Is that why he's got the job?
Yeah. Oh, it could be, actually.
It could be. That's how
it could be.
That often happens. It's like when Compo's son became Compo in Last of the Summer Wine. It was, yeah.
I think I've only ever seen, like, two-thirds of an episode of that, like, cumulatively.
That's pretty impressive.
It was the one with the bathtub, wasn't it?
That's
which I've never seen, but everyone has seen it, haven't seen it.
They all have that. They all have that in the... I miss Last of Summer Wine. It got to the point where you would notice with Peter Salas's scenes, he'd always be sitting in a chair. They would just cut to him and even... It's kind of almost... It's like a bit like the Daily Mirror cartoon page. Read those, none of them have any jokes in it at all. Some of them are just a conversation between some cartoon
characters. Have you ever read...
They're never a joke, and it was like
have
that.
Have you ever read Doonesbury?
Yeah.
Doonesbury, yeah. And they've now got Doonesbury Classic. What do they mean? Do you know what they... Have you ever read them?
I've read them, and I don't understand them. But I always assume with Doonesbury that if you were into it... you would get it. But with the Daily Mirror cartoons, it's like there's just like one that's a woman and she just looks like she's going to be, it's going to be funny. And then it's just a conversation.
It's like the beginning of a conversation. And then it ends. You think, oh, well, I must remember to look tomorrow. It'll come. And it doesn't carry on. It would end like the panel would end. Well, maybe we should go inside. That's it. You know, they'd be at a door.
I think cartoonists get away with a lot.
Yeah, Doonesbury does.
I
didn't
hear the all of them do.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, Last Summer Wine was a bit like that, in that it's very gentle. I was very into Diagnosis Murder.
I never saw that one.
I had to watch that, and I can genuinely watch those like 100 times.
I don't know that one. Oh, I mean, I know of it.
I'm going to buy you all on DVD and send it to you, and you have to watch it. Someone sent me the whole of Goodnight Sweetheart. I've been to Goodnight Sweetheart as well.
Are you into it now? You like
it? No, I mean, I'm fascinated by it.
Okay.
If that's on, I have to watch it.
Okay, did you like Alf?
I didn't really see very much of Alf.
It was quite funny, wasn't it? Or was it me? It was funny, or was it terrible?
The mix.
There we are.
It's Marmite. Alf is like Marmite. Everything's like Marmite.
I got into Alf. It was a bit weird. I don't know why, but I even bought the doll.
Right.
I've got the doll, and it's got a talking box thingy in it. Talking box. Talking box. You know, it does his voice. So it does Margaret Thatcher's voice. That would be good. An Alf toy that does Margaret Thatcher's voice that just says, "I'm not really dead." I'm coming for you, Jeffrey.
I think it'd be quite nice if the spitting image, when people died, their soul got transferred into their spitting image puppet, and then there was somewhere you could go and watch them all living together.
Their soul got transferred into a different spitting image.
And then their actual
that would be good. So like,
but they had to try and do the voice of whoever they were.
Yes, they had to. And you had to go on holiday with them.
Yeah, that'd be good. What is worse, bestiality or necrophilia?
What is worse?
Yeah. I mean, they're both good, right? But which way? Yeah.
Is this a trick question? What is worse?
Oh, if you prefer, which is better, necrophilia or bestiality?
What is better?
It's the same question.
What is worse? Oh, God. But yeah, you went to Oxford, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I was at Oxford at the same time as the Prime Minister.
What is worse? It's funny you should say that. I was watching today, there's a documentary I was just flicking, it was on the war, and it was an ex-Nazi,
right?
And obviously I like to shoot. And he was talking, he after the war, he ran a pig farm. And it was weird, he was talking about the pigs and blah, 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 the German pigs that had 16 ribs compared to the Spanish one. This does have a point.
Okay.
And not just about pigs, pig biology. And he suddenly said, when I was a kid... I remember a very tall, I was five, handsome German man, took his penis out and waggled it around, and I hid, and then he made love to the calves. And the calves didn't seem to mind. Right, he just said that, so this man. And then he just talked about pigs and being a Nazi, but it wasn't, I don't know why it was in there, why they left it in there. It's just, why, and why did he say it? He said, "I never told anyone, not even my mother." Can you imagine telling your mother that one? But I'm evading the question. Oh, I don't know. Animals is worse. And dead animals.
Dead animals is definitely the worst.
Dead animals
so
is the
you're
best.
Saying
out of all of them, dead animals is the best.
Is the best to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
In my experience, dead animals are the best. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We're going to have to wrap up quite soon, so I'm going to have to just knock out a few emergency questions that are very important.
So any more smutty ones, Richard?
No, no? I'm not that kind of person.
No, you're not.
What crimes have you got away with?
That's a good one. Oh, God.
I mean, I suppose a lot of the things you do, I mean, technically a lot of that putting signs in the wood is probably a crime.
Well, my wife was worried she said, you're going to get caught and it's going to be in the local paper. And I said, I want to be caught and I want to be in the local paper. That is my aim, is to be caught and be in the local paper.
That's my attitude towards stealing penny pick and mix.
I want to do them still.
I still do it because I want to be caught.
Well, you shouldn't do that
paper.
Because a friend of mine worked for a chain. I can't say their name. Always. And they had for a while in their pick and mix beetle grubs.
Right. Is that to try and dissuade me from stealing them?
Yeah, they did.
Richard Herring.
I can't remember what they were called, if they're called biscuit beetles or something like that. But they were like, it was either Woolworths or somewhere else, but they had like an infestation of an. So
is that why they closed down?
I think so, yeah.
Because pick and mix was the main thing about Woolworths. So if it was infested, and Don Estelle selling his CDs, cassettes rather.
Cassettes.
He used to go around selling cassettes in Woolworths.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he do like
tragic
live PAs?
Yeah.
Right.
It was utterly tragic. I actually have the Don Estelle book now. Chris Evans, not that one, or that one, lent it to me. He got one. It's called Thoughts of a Gemini. I talked to Robin Ince about it. I haven't read it yet, though.
Well, the worst book I ever bought was, I went into Clinton's Cards, and, you know, the card shop, and in the window they were advertising the autobiography of the chairman of Clinton's Cards. And it was called Pick a Card. And I bought it. And it was like $19.99, and I think it's out of print now. And I was talking with the comedian Rhys Thomas, and he got obsessed as well. And I bought him a copy, and we were going to do a book club, and both of us read it, and we just never did. And I did a clear out, and I gave it away to the charity shop.
Yeah.
I should have read that. But it was all about the pictures. Were like first Clinton's Cards, like in 1992.
Yeah.
The second Clinton's Card. Here I am with the staff in Berkhamsted.
I had the idea of selling cards.
Exactly.
Then I sold cards. Then the internet came along.
And
sort
I didn't
wrecked
sell
it.
Cards. I always thought a good idea would be, you know, like we had to write a lot of thank you cards when we had our baby. But like, you don't get your welcome cards. You know, when you get thank you cards, I think like a card, a ready printed card that just says you're welcome, and send it back to someone. I think you make at least £1 with that idea.
Don't say anything. No, don't mention it. That should be the next one.
Yeah, exactly. My pleasure. I said no. It goes on and on. All right. Really specialist. Maybe the guy from Clinton's Cards, I could get in touch with him. Maybe we could do us three. We could give up the comedy thing and we could just set a very specialised cards.
I think it's the only way forward for cards, because they've been ruined. My wife, the one in the Westfield closed down, I think it was a Clinton's.
Right.
My wife's very upset because she likes to go and buy cards and she likes to select them.
She's a serial card buyer. She just buys cards.
She loves buying cards. But, you know, on the internet it's not the same, and you can now change them so they say what you want. But you don't want that. You want a proper card.
No, you do want a proper card.
And so, you know, it's a sad thing that's gone. But I think there are enough people in the world that if you did something like that, there was a never-ending...
Yeah.
Thing. You remember like when Facebook came out and there was poking, and you'd poke someone, they'd poke you back, and you'd poke them back, and then it was whoever, it was like an endless game of who would poke,
you're
who would
be the one poking me.
Who would stop poking, because you would lose the game. So I think if you did something that cost increasing amounts of money, so you let them in for it's 1p for the first card, but by the time you get to the 10th card, it's like 5, 10 pounds, 20, 50, 100. But then there's a shame to being the first one to duck out of the exchange, and you'd make millions.
We should definitely will make millions.
It's like an upside down pyramid scheme.
Yeah, that never works.
And that must actually, you know, the reason a pyramid scheme doesn't work is the pyramid hits the ground. If the pyramid's up that way, it's endless. No, it can go on forever.
I remember my parents did my mum and dad did a pyramid scheme in the 80s.
They were involved in it.
Actually, I tried to set one up. That's illegal.
It is illegal.
And we caught it because then I think it was called something like the Californian Gold Circle. And then I did one called the San Francisco Silver Circle. But I was too scared to do it. But they did make money. I remember like money went, it was weird. Like he made like a few hundred pounds.
It works for the people at the top of the pyramid. It works
and they would laugh.
Even the people in the first, second or third layer. But then there's not enough people in the world by the 20th layer.
That's where we step in, with the cards. You're welcome. My pleasure. Your pleasure.
And people would be interested just to see what the next one would be.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to think.
It's like a serial, isn't it? Like, what will happen next? And then one just goes, "Oh, fuck you, fuck off, I hate you."
Then it goes to. It just ends with "thank you," yeah. And then it goes, "you're welcome." It starts again.
Right, well, we have no more time. I can't ask you any more of the emergency questions. I was desperate to find out which eight Richards you would take to a desert island, but we'll never,
know. Which one? What was that?
Who?
What was that question?
There's a man's come on with your sandwich. Dave's come on, there's your sandwich. Thank you. It's Dave. That's Dave Cribb. Current producer. I like to keep the producers on their toes.
It's going to be the blandest sandwich. I'm not going to eat it, but it's going to be just butter
Is it turkey and tomato ketchup?
There we are. Just turkey. Might not even have butter in it.
Let's get a close-up
of
that. There we go.
There we are.
It's nice in... nice.
It's
nice
proof.
And is there enough money in there for you to get your shirts, Philip?
Some money.
Yeah.
And turkey sandwiches. Money and turkey sandwiches. What more do you want?
What an amazing way. If it was my wife, she'd just tell me to fuck off. She'd say, fuck off and walk home.
What was weird was, your wife made me the sandwiches.
Yeah, that's very nice.
And it's your money.
It's good. And on that bombshell, ladies and gentlemen, give a big round of applause.
Thank you.
Robert Papa, Robin Cooper, everyone. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Let's go and eat your sandwich. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Let's Square the Podcast. Me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Robert Papa. It is good, isn't it? I like it. The music you're listening to is by Pest. The thank you to the Leicester Square Theatre for having us here to do this. That's very kind of them. Also, thank you to Go Faster Stripe for organising everything and sorting out the Kickstarter that made this free for people who are watching it. Not you. You're listening on the telephone, aren't you, you idiot? It was produced by Dave Cribb. It is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Stripe production. I hope you like it. Can you stop rustling crisps back there, George? Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoy these podcasts, please just tell your friends about them. That would be the very least you could do. Do come down and see us. We record at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's still a few left in this series, but we'll be doing more in June and July 2016, and then maybe the autumn 2016 if there is enough interest. Or come and see me on tour doing my show Happy Now. Go to richherring.com/happy_now/tour, and you can see if I'm coming near to you. Get in touch with your local theatre and ask them to book me if you would like me to come to your theatre. Anyway, thanks for listening. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.